third case this morning is Stanley against Gentry. Ms. Morris.
Good morning, Judge Easterbrook, Judge Mannion, Judge King. My name is Marilyn Morris. I'm with the law firm of Cohen & Mallett, and I represent Lawrence and Lolita Stanley, who live in Terre Haute, Indiana. I'd like to thank the court very briefly for its gracious and patient indulgence with my recent illness so that I could be here personally, and I'd also like to thank opposing counsel who has been most kind. This is an appeal from an action under 42 U.S.C. Section 1983. There were originally two sets of defendants, a group of City of Terre Haute defendants who had arrested the plaintiff in the middle of the night for allegedly battering a police officer while they tried to serve an arrest warrant for someone who had never lived at her home. The second group is the group that is here before the court today, the Vigo County defendants, Jail Officer Henson, who booked the plaintiff into the Vigo County Jail, conducted a pat search of her person outside of her clothing, which produced nothing, and who then required the plaintiff to disrobe to her underpants in a room without a door, just off of the book-in area. During which she was constantly watched by Jail Officer Henson. It also includes the jail commander and the elected sheriff who promulgated and maintained the policy. A settlement was reached between the city and the Terre Haute defendants. The case between the plaintiff and the county defendants was submitted on stipulated facts and cross motions for summary judgment. The magistrate judge issued a recommendation and report which granted in part and denied in part each of our respective motions. The district court, Judge Tinder, modified the magistrate's report and recommendation and entered summary judgment in favor of the county defendant.
No disagreement that the female officer who observed her did not touch her.
None at all, Your Honor. That's absolutely correct. There was no physical touching. Mrs. Stanley had no prior criminal history whatsoever. She did nothing.
Does that make it different than any of the strip search cases that you've cited?
Of having a prior criminal history?
No, of not touching.
It is, Your Honor, it is, certainly it's an aggravating factor. There's no question that there are many distasteful and aggravating factors that increase the invasion into the personal liberty and therefore require that the individuals conducting the search demonstrate much more closely probable cause.
This is at the other end, though, where she merely observed her disrobing and putting on jail.
Correct. This is at the other end, and so the invasion isn't that great, but there is absolutely no cause whatsoever demonstrated. It is an across-the-board strip search policy that requires a disrobing to your underpants, irrespective of whether this is your first time in jail or whether you are...
I know there was a disagreement about what was actually said, and said take everything off with your underpants. The other side says take everything off with your underwear. Is there a written policy, and what does it say?
The written policy, Your Honor, does not describe the degree to which one must disrobe. It is appended and is in the stipulated facts, and it permits a strip search only for felonies, for commitments, meaning people who aren't being bonded out immediately out on jail, and for narcotics offenses, none of which are applicable in this situation at all.
Is everyone who has to put on a jumpsuit, is this the process?
It is, Your Honor.
So for whatever reason, somebody's going to go in and have to wear the jumpsuit, somebody watches and change clothes.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And that's what we're calling a strip search.
It's what I'm calling a strip search, Your Honor, and based on my best ability to look at this, I recognize that Judge Easterbrook in the Peckham versus Wisconsin Department of Corrections case had indicated that it was a completely naked person, but I believe it was contextual within the case.
I don't understand what difference it makes whether this is a strip search or not. The constitutional question is whether it was a reasonable search.
No question.
And one shouldn't get tied up in names the constitutional question is whether the search procedure is reasonable.
I agree, Your Honor. And in that case, one must look at the
stop asking what to call it.
All right. I'll proceed from there.
We call it, you know, Jennifer.
Works for me, Your Honor.
Okay.
At that point, one must look at the balancing factors articulated in Bell versus Wolfish. And in this case, we're looking at that means that one has to look at approximately four different factors: the location of the search, the invasion of the liberties, the justification for the search, and the I have to find the fourth one, I apologize. But the first thing that one must do under that is to simply sit down, and you have to balance the invasion of the personal liberties versus the government's need. In this case, we know what the invasion is. A woman was required to strip to her underpants. It's not the most egregious situation that I'm sure you've heard, and thank heavens for that. But I don't think anyone in this courtroom, and particularly most women, would agree with the defendant's position that this was somehow some benign situation. It's personally distasteful. It's an affront to one's
dignity. If you were wearing a bra, would that make a difference?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. 12 of the 14 states that have taken the trouble to define strip search, one of which was Illinois, which did so in reaction to the revelations of what kinds of strip searches were going on in Chicago, define it as requiring someone to either disrobe or rearrange their clothing so that they are viewed to view either private parts or a person's undergarments. It has to do with, it's a greater invasion the farther one goes.
What do you think would be a permissible procedure to have someone put on jail?
Precisely what we proposed in this situation, Your Honor. In this room, it's a divided room with a half wall that comes up 4 feet, behind which there was a commode. All the jail officer had to do was to hand her the jail stuff, uniform, tell her to go behind this partial wall so that she can't be seen by anyone else who's being booked in or the jail officers, remove what clothing she is required to remove, put on the jail jumpsuit, come out, hand the clothes over. U.S. versus Edwards says you can search those clothes, inventory them, look at them, but to sit down and say
if
that
she's carrying contraband into the prison, not possible to detect, if that's the drill.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand your question.
If she's carrying contraband, it will not be possible to detect the contraband under your proposal.
That's
right?
Correct, Your Honor. It would not. And
why aren't prisons always entitled to book people in a way that makes it possible to detect contraband?
Because that's precisely what the holding in this was in the Mary Beth G case.
There's a constitutional right to carry guns, explosives, files, drugs, anything else, provided you put them under your outer garment.
No, Your Honor.
Can't possibly be right.
No, nor is it. It is based upon the factors that can be objectively looked at. Whether that person was arrested for a weapons or a drug charge. Whether that person makes some kind of furtive movement.
I assure you that when you go into a federal prison, you are thoroughly inspected and searched, even if you went for violating the tax laws, the securities laws, or the antitrust laws. And on your view, that's all completely unconstitutional, and that seems quite odd.
Well, Your Honor, I don't believe it's quite that blanket. It is a situation where, first of all, this woman was pat searched, and that is encompassed within the full search that's authorized, incident to a custodial arrest or to a detention. No question about that. But in order to do something of a greater invasion than a full search, one must come closer to demonstrating some reasonable basis measured against an objective standard to say that this should happen. Otherwise, Mary Beth G stands for nothing. And in this case, when you have misdemeanors, traffic infractors, persons who are going to be released on bond very shortly, who are not going to be commingled with a jail population, the risk is low. As we go up the ramp, if the persons are arrested on more serious offenses, felonies, a charge that involves weapons or drugs, or if the person commit some act while being booked in that gives the jail officer a good reason to believe that they are doing something, we move away from that. If these are people who are not going to be bonded out, who have been retained or detained after a bond hearing, these people too are going to be subjected to a greater invasion. It's the balancing, and in this case, Mrs. Stanley was on the very low end of the spectrum.
Well, you're concerned more, I guess, with her, the process when they let her go, because then they had the same process: take off the jumpsuit, put on her T-shirt, whatever she had. She didn't have much, did she?
No, Your Honor.
You know, that's the curious thing about this case. None of it's there. How'd they take her out of her house with a T-shirt and underwear on?
Well, she actually got to put on some pants, Your Honor, and they threw a jacket around her shoulder. It was January in the middle of winter. It wasn't a very pleasant situation.
It didn't sound like it, but I guess, anyway, she didn't have a lot on.
Correct.
In clothes, basically, and so she had to put those back on when she left under the same circumstance, which I assume that's different than going in, at least.
I have absolutely no understanding of the exit search, but I would prefer, if I might, to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Certainly.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. McKay.
Thank you, Judge Easterbrook. May it please the court, my name is Craig McKay. I represent William Harris, Jeffrey Ennen, and Anita Henson, who are referred to generically in the briefs as the Vigo County defendants. In many ways, I think this is a case of first impression. I was somewhat astonished at the outset of this case to learn that a decision on these precise facts had not been made in any of the circuits. At the risk of incurring the court's wrath and having to rename my view of the case, I've viewed this as much more of a jail clothing exchange case than a strip search case. What indeed happened here, and what the stipulated facts demonstrate, was that when Mrs. Stanley was presented at the Vigo County Jail early in the morning, she was processed, she was path searched, she was escorted to a quasi-private location in the presence of a female officer and asked to change into the typical jail garb, the typical orange jumpsuit. She was then returned to a separate cell. At that hour, it could not be known that this arrest would eventually result in the dismissal of any charges, although she was not introduced into the general jail population. That was not something that the jail officer knew at that hour. I do indeed think that the Stanleys have made some serious inferences from relatively benign facts, and it takes us back, as both parties have observed here, to an analysis under Bell versus Wolfish. We're essentially agreed on the facts, and I think we're essentially agreed on what case law exists to guide the court in making the decision on this appeal. Our view of the cases cited, particularly the strip search cases cited in the Seventh Circuit, is that this case is easily distinguishable from those cases, in cases that oftentimes presented egregious facts about the circumstances in which an arrestee found herself. In this case, as Judge Kaney asked earlier, there was absolutely no question that she was not touched, she was not manhandled, she was not inspected. As a matter of fact, these facts result from an accidental and unplanned exposure. Had she been wearing a brassiere, with all due respect to counsel, I'm not sure we would be here. What had happened is that she had been rousted from her home, separate case, the Terre Haute Police Department case, and presented to the jail in the middle of the night. She did not customarily wear a bra as part of her night clothes, and so when she was presented to the jail, she was not wearing that particular item of undergarment. That in and of itself, I respectfully suggest, does not convert the jail clothing exchange procedure into a so-called strip search. The object of the enterprise was not to inspect the arrestee's body. The object of the enterprise was to, for all of the traditional reasons that have been discussed in the case law, put her in a uniform that distinguished her, along with other inmates, saw to the hygienic needs of a new arrestee who was going to be introduced into the jail population, and all the other reasons that have been described in the other cases. when we look at the Bell standards and look at the manner in which this procedure was conducted, she was escorted by same gender jail employee. She was the only person present. There is no record or no evidence in this case that she was observed by any other persons, and that certainly distinguishes it from some of the cases that the appellant has cited.
Was the door open so that if someone happened to walk by, they would have could have looked in and seen her? I guess that seems it's pretty much acknowledged that no one happened to do that.
That's correct, Your Honor. And early on, if you go back to the complaint, there was a concern that there was a camera, a video surveillance camera, monitoring this area, but it was adduced in the course of discovery that that camera did not capture this particular part of the booking area. It's difficult to describe because it's not a room with a door per se. It's kind of a segregated area with a partial wall that would have obscured. So the officer escorted Mrs. Stanley behind this wall to conduct the exchange. And to some degree, we're dependent on Mrs. Stanley's recollection of this because, quite honestly, Judge Mannion, the jail officer, who by the time this suit was filed had moved to another state and had to be located, had no independent recollection of this particular book-in, this particular arrestee. This did not stand out in some significant way to her. So
everybody that came into the prison and was going to put in on the jumpsuit went through this room and changed.
As I understand the sheriff's policy, if it was for anything other than a traffic offense, if someone was going to be admitted to jail, charged, and be appearing in one of the county or superior courts the next morning, they would be in the general jail population. They would follow this procedure until the person either bonded out or was released on their own recognizance. That was the standard practice.
And when they bond out or are released or whatever, they go through the same changing process, apparently.
And I think the reason for that, Judge, is just to make sure that the area is secure. This person is going to be released. They wanted a jail officer present to make sure that there was the appropriate exchange of that person's belongings that had been recorded and inventoried at the time of the arrest, and that there was an exchange that occurred at that time to protect the interests of all concerned. We have rejected from our standpoint the notion of a private dressing room for two reasons. One, for the reasons that Judge Easterbrook observed, we think that creates a highly dangerous situation at a highly sensitive time. And the second reason is that as the sheriff's policies observe, there are some fairly sound policy statements in there in instructing the jail officers about what procedure to follow at the time a person who has been arrested is introduced into the jail population. It's a highly sensitive, oftentimes emotional time. Sometimes these arrestees have been injured in the course of the arrest or have been injured in the course of some fracas or accident that occurred to lead to the arrest. Sometimes these persons, I'm not suggesting that Mrs. Stanley was, but sometimes these persons are under the influence of alcohol or drugs, and so there's a very strict routine that is observed to see to the safety of all concerned, not only for jail personnel, but for other persons who are housed in the jail, and indeed for the person who has been arrested. And so if that jail officer somehow has to make some kind of value judgment in a very short period of time about who can be trusted to go behind the curtain and who ought not to be trusted to go behind the curtain in order to change in the jail guard, I think that increases the dangers and suddenly we're out of balance. We've created a situation that is desperately weighed against the safety and security of the institution in favor of the privacy of the arrestee. Certainly in this case, we take the view that this notion of a department store dressing room is simply not an appropriate procedure to require the county jail or the local penal institution to employ. In terms of the justification for this procedure, in terms of interpreting Bell versus Wolfish, we think this is a process that protects inmates and jail employees by finding and withholding contraband from the general population, as Judge Easterbrook observed. There is another reason that has been observed in the cases, that this discourages any theft by jail employees or false claims by arrestees that their belongings have been misplaced or stolen or taken from them in some way. the hygienic concerns, and frankly, and thankfully rarely, on the occasion when someone makes an escape, it certainly makes them stand out and easier to locate if they're in the orange jail suit. And finally, the final consideration in Bell was the place where it occurred, and I think that place is defined in two ways. One, in terms of the institution itself, a secure facility, and also the place.
You don't need to observe the person to figure out whether when she comes out she's wearing an orange jumpsuit. Is it your concern that she might be wearing two sets of clothing? Right, takes off one set of clothing, hands it to the jailer, puts on the orange jumpsuit, then takes off the orange jumpsuit, is still in clothing, and escapes in the civilian clothing. That's
not really.
That seems pretty remote.
Yeah, I would agree that that's remote, but I don't know that it's remote that an officer could miss something in a pat search, and when someone goes behind the curtain, they are able now to secrete something.
The contraband argument seems to me stronger than the argument that we need to have everybody in orange jumpsuits, because you can observe whether they're in orange jumpsuits without observing them change into the orange jumpsuits.
I concur with that, Your Honor. But the contraband issue is a very serious issue, and that cannot always be detected in a pat search. And so when you're putting someone behind the curtain, now they're changing clothes, but they're in a position where they can remove items that are in their street clothes undetected, and put them in the orange suit, put them in a pocket, put them in their undergarments, and now you've introduced that contraband into the jail environment.
But that doesn't distinguish then, or it does distinguish the entry and the exit. The exit's more problematical then, isn't it?
Your Honor, I think the exit issue is one of just making sure that the entire situation is secured in terms of exchanging the clothes.
One would suppose you're worried about people inside the prison passing or smuggling, say, messages or money or directions to their co-conspirators out.
With no disrespect to my client, Your Honor, that's not unheard of. We don't have any incident of that kind in Vigo County, but it's
one reason why prisons examine all outgoing mail.
That's correct. And that is a problem, and can be a problem in any kind of penal institutional environment. I do want to address, before I close, the issue of qualified immunity. I do indeed think that however counsel or the court would ultimately characterize these facts and interpret them under Bell, that Anita Henson, who was the officer charged to do this, is entitled to qualified immunity. Based on the research that both sides have done and based on the arguments that have been presented to you in the brief, I think you easily can conclude that the law in this area is not well settled, and that Anita Henson nor her employers would have been on notice that conducting what otherwise is a constitutional legal clothing exchange suddenly becomes an unconstitutional strip search simply by the fact that the arrestee was not wearing a bra at the time that she was arrested. We would respectfully suggest that the law in this area has not been clearly established, and this is a classic situation in which qualified immunity is appropriate. In conclusion then, Your Honors, we believe the district court correctly evaluated these facts, applied the standard from Bell, that the procedure employed, however characterized, is not an unreasonable search. Again, the court has observed the issue here is not the fact of the search, but whether the search or the process was unreasonable in some way, and that the district court should be affirmed.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Ms. Morris?
Your Honor, the very strict routine that counsel for county defendants has enunciated is precisely the blanket strip search policy that Mary Beth G. Declared unconstitutional. To call it a clothing exchange is the end run around Mary Beth G., just as observing inmates while they shower in a delousing shower or something else. The purpose is the balance.
You know, we've said there's no constitutional problem in observing inmates as they shower. And in fact, Johnson against Phelan held there's no constitutional problem in having that done by a guard of the opposite sex.
I'm aware of that, Your Honor, but in each of those cases...
Well, if you then analogize your situation to watching inmates shower, you're in trouble.
It has to do with the status of the inmate. In the cases in which you have discussed, Johnson versus Phelan, et cetera, they were not pretrial detainees, or they were people who had been detained, not someone charged with minor offenses or infractions, not the people who were going to be released. It has to, the balancing has to do with whether these people have contact with the outside and can bring something in, whether they're going to be introduced into a jail population, whether their demeanor demonstrates that they may well have a problem. And to absolutely just issue a blanket strip search policy is exactly what this court denied in Mary Beth G. And it's for that reason, Your Honor, that we do not believe that qualified immunity is applicable here. The Supreme Court has said as long as the governmental official is reasonably warned that that the conduct that they are conducting is in some manner violative of the Constitution, then it's not going to be protected by a qualified immunity. And to simply call it a something different than what it is, to call it a clothing inventory. If we're simply inventorying clothing, there isn't a reason in the world that jail officer needs to be there, unless the truth is we're looking for contraband. I don't have a problem with that, Your Honor. I'm a firm believer in institutional security. I'm married to a police officer, and I was the attorney for the Indianapolis Police Department and the Marion County Sheriff's Department for 12 years, and they were in the biggest jail in the state. But I can tell you, Your Honor, that when this court issued the Mary Beth G. opinion, I had to come to Jesus talk with the boys in the jail and said, the Seventh Circuit means what they say. Those people who are not arrested for felonies, those people who are not arrested for narcotics or weapons violations, those people who do not have a demonstrable criminal history cannot be strip searched unless you have either a reasonable suspicion or probable cause. And we did not flip the bird at the Seventh Circuit, Your Honor. We took the court at its word and believed wholeheartedly that blanket policies were abhorrent, and that is what we ask that the court deny today. We ask that the court reverse the district court and enter judgment for the blanket.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.